Author of the Week, featuring another great creator of narratives for the human race on Southside Broadcasting and Siren Radio.
The official line was 10,000 hours to actually become an expert in anything. If you look at 10,000 hours, maybe 17,000 hours means that you certainly are an expert, times 1.5 at least. And that's how we're delighted to introduce our latest author of the week, of course, with an intriguing dark take on the festive season, which we'll find out about as we head through the interview. We, of course, welcome the voice of so many delightful podcasts across the globe, but certainly around Houston. It's Freddie Cruz. How are you, Freddie?
Wonderful. Thank you so much for having me on the show, Alex. It's a pleasure to be here. I've never been on UK radio, so this is a first for me, and it's an honor.
Well, welcome to Siren Radio, of course, scholars in radio entertainment, and indeed Southside Broadcasting. So two for the price of one. So great stuff there. Let's jump straight into the whole process of this particular book, which I must admit, I thought, well, this is certainly no It's a Wonderful Life. It's not even the Grinch. It's probably it's the Grinch crossed with all sorts of things. Allow me to ruin your Christmas. If nothing else, it certainly talks about revenge fantasies. Beckett, of course, who is the main protagonist or antagonist of the whole process. He kind of sees something between his mother and his favorite podcaster that no child should ever see, really, which set him off obviously on this whole disaster run.
Yeah, and it's crazy because it starts with that, but believe it or not, it gets worse because he finds out that his favorite podcaster was somehow involved in his father's death. And so it just all spirals downhill from chapter one. And anybody who has done even just a small amount of writing knows that you've got to have a hook. And then once you get that hook, you just make your characters' lives a living nightmare. You put them through the ringer, you throw them into that gauntlet. There are no happy times. And I've got this unspoken rule with my work that by the end of anything I write, I want readers questioning whether or not they were rooting for the correct character.
I mean, interesting in terms of the line for this, as Adam Hamdy said, best-selling author, of course, of The Other Side of Night, if you like your festive stories dark and twisted, Freddie Cruz has a gem for you. Allow me to ruin your Christmas is packed full of secrets, lies, and diabolical characters you love to hate. Now, I thought it was just a Christmas carol back in the 19th century that actually sort of followed that pathway, with Dickens obviously punishing Ebenezer for his love of capitalism. I mean, goodness me, that's all, really. So is this something which you kind of always wanted to see the dark side of the season, which, to be fair, actually, for a lot of people, can be very stressful and it can be very traumatic as well.
Yeah, maybe it's let me just take a step back, because I started writing this book in July of last year, which, as I'm not sure
if you're going to write a Christmas novel, why not write it in the middle of summer? I mean, clearly,
yeah, in the middle of the summer, when people are celebrating Christmas in July and there are back to back movies on a couple of certain cable channels. I'm not sure how it is in the UK, but, you know, we here in America, we love our consumerism and our capitalism. And so, yeah, it was absolutely a projection of, well, you know what? These people and their happy endings and their beautiful love stories. How about I make something completely opposite of the narrative, of all the narratives, the back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back movies?
Well, I mean, I did think actually when I first saw the name Freddy, I thought, is this surely Freddy from Nightmare on Elm Street? Are we talking a different kind of Freddy here? Where you going to actually sort of reveal your claws and stripy shirt? But I can actually confirm for the listener via the Zoom that Freddy is not wearing a stripy shirt, thank the Lord, which is good.
That is good.
So moving on from that, I mean, clearly you get to know your characters, you create the characters and so on. Do you identify with them? Do you ever feel sorry for them? Or are you just a case of, this is the chance to let my inner sadist loose?
I love that question. And I would have to say that it just depends on the character. Obviously, I love what I do I love everything that I do creatively, especially with writing, because it's such deliberate very deliberate act when you're creating a story, because you're literally by yourself, bored to tears, wondering if what you're writing is worth reading, wondering who in your circle is going to think you're completely insane for doing what you're doing. So you gotta have love for even your villains. But as far as identifying with characters, I would say there are pieces of me in every single one of them. I would have to say that the character out of my three books, they're all standalone novels. Out of the three books, the one that I probably resonate with the most is a female character from my second book, because she is an independent author. And I'll just leave it at that.
That's perfectly okay. Now, we were looking obviously at freddycruzcreativeworks.com, the go-to site to actually find out all manner of Cruise goodness. And I was fascinated, Freddie, in terms of how you create you compare the process of writing to actually running a marathon and actually exercising that writing muscle, which although is something which certainly in creative writing courses we've heard a great deal about. But even before that, we dial back a little further, the notion that when you're working in broadcasting and doing radio material, you're playing thousands and thousands of narratives and stories all the time. So inevitably, you wanted to channel your own.
Absolutely. And I think it's all humans, we are meaning-making factories. And so I don't think the majority of us realize that. So I was fortunate enough to have a decent voice who was okay behind the mic, who is okay on the camera, and I'm okay with the pen and on the keyboard. And so I think as I got older, I realized that, hey, you might be able to do some, you might be able to, earn a small living off of talking and writing. And so, 4.5, almost 5 decades later, I'm here.
And podcasting has come a long way since it was first billed as the portable on-demand audio put forward by that company, much beloved of Steve Jobs, who's obviously gone on to greater things in other dimensions at present. But over the last, let's say, 15 years that we've been podcasting, because we've spoken to a number of folk. We've obviously been doing podcasts since 2008, 2009. We've just completed our 5,000th podcast, so we're heading through that process in the States. Obviously, huge numbers. We've got. Phil Lynas, our good friend from Chilpack Hollywood Hour, and Dean Haglund, they have been producing podcasts since 2007, 2008. Do you think that the podcast is something that is unique insofar as it enables people to connect more than broadcast radio would, perhaps?
Just a couple of weeks ago, I heard a former fellow terrestrial radio broadcaster say something genius because someone asked, what's the difference between broadcasting and podcasting? And it's a great question. It really is. And so, broadcasting, she broke it down, and I forget her name, otherwise, I credit her with this, but she says broadcasting is just that. It's broad, it's mass appeal, it's bubblegum, it's a big, you're casting a big net. Podcasting, you're in a pod, a teeny tiny pod where the host, where you, Alex, can connect one-on-one with your guest, and we can connect two-on-one with our listener. Now, there may be 100 listeners at this current moment, or there might be 1,000 or 10,000 or however many, we get. That's irrelevant because the person listening to this conversation between the two of us is going to feel like it's three. So that's where it's a convenient, cozy little pod.
And that goes over time, of course, as well, because not only is it a case of, well, if you miss the transmission, it's too late. If you're not listening to this when it's first released, you can hear it when it's transmitted. You can hear it at other times. There's an archive that's actually up there. You can do all sorts of things with that. So it is very handy from that perspective. But I think it's nice that it's working through that. What led you into broadcasting first and foremost, Freddie? Was it something where you thought, yeah, I fall in love with the magic of radio. I mean, I could recall when I was first invited by a colleague who ended up as head of news at BBC Essex to go along to his radio system, etc. And the station manager said, "Would you like to do this sort of ring?" I said, "Yeah, okay, fine. Let's use it as a communications tool." What was your route into broadcasting?
My route I can trace back to when I was in junior high, and our coach. Now, you may or may not know this, Alex, but in Texas, we take football, not soccer, we take football very seriously. And at the time, I wanted to be just like Bo Jackson, the legendary NFL star who was also a Major League Baseball player. So he played football for the Raiders, baseball for the Royals, and that was my sports idol. He was, he was a god. And he was incredible, and I wanted to do. I was an early bloomer, so I was a little taller than my peers. But in junior high, Coach Swanson had the talk with us. The talk, Alex, was essentially, in a nutshell, 99% of you are never going to make it to the NFL, much less play college ball. So do good in school. And after having my ego shattered, which was easy for a junior high kid, I kind of gave it some thought, like, okay, well, what, how can I be near sports? And so I thought, oh, I'll be like my favorite sports TV guy, Bob Allen, who's the late Bob Allen. Unfortunately, he's since passed away in 2016, but I wanted to be like Bob and anchor the sports news on Channel 13 here in Houston. And how do I get to TV? You use radio as a stepping stone. Well, I got into radio and never left because I loved it so much. And so I worked on the radio, top 40, did some top 40 work for a long time while taking 8 years to get my 4-year degree.
So you were not hyper inspired by the likes of Wolfman Jack or Howard Stern then in the broadcasting history.
No, absolutely not. No. I mean, no disrespect to the legends, but yeah, I didn't really grow up listening to them.
Yeah, and equally, I think it's fair to say, Freddie, that neither Wolfman Jack nor indeed Howard Stern ever wanted to be American footballers. So it just goes to show, it's a thought, really. It's important. Okay, let's move back to the current book as well that we're talking about today because it is a key focus from that perspective. Would you imagine sequels allowing to this? I mean, can we look forward to Allow Me to Ruin Your Easter? Allow Me to Ruin Your Hanukkah? Allow Me to Ruin Your Thanksgiving? I mean, is there a kind of pattern that you could actually develop here, even with different characters?
You heard it here first. Ladies and gentlemen, listen to Siren Radio. There will be Allow Me to Ruin Your National Tooth Fairy Day. No, there won't
Yeah.
be one of those. But no,
Okay.
a sequel, in all seriousness, I have been told that there must be a sequel. I don't know when it will be. I'm getting some stuff 2022 professionally. 2021 and 2022 have been professionally difficult yet transitional yet rewarding times. So writing fiction is not really at the top of the priority list, but I do want to do that. And there is going to be a fifth anniversary edition of my first novel that's going to be remixed. So a sequel to Allow Me to Ruin Your Christmas, the long answer, there will be one. I just don't know when.
Well, time is always challenging. I think recently one of the statistics that I was quite fascinated by is that most lifetimes are approximately 4,000 months in duration, which is actually 4,000 weeks in duration, which is about 80 years. So, we have to use every one really on that basis and squeeze the juice out of every second. And I think you're doing that, Freddie. Let's move into another a line that we tend to ask a lot of our authors. And I suspect you'd probably say, of course, I mean, inevitably. Some authors like to write in perfect silence. They like to shut the whole world off, go into a room, and actually just have themselves and their keyboard or other writing instruments to hand. Others like to have a soundtrack. They actually archive and collate together a specific a list of tunes. They might be lyrics that mean a lot to them. There may not be any lyrics at all. There may just be soundtracks to movies and motion pictures and so on. Do you have one? Did you have one when you were writing May I Ruin Your Christmas? Or was there Allow Me to Ruin Your Christmas? Or was it a case of no, I've got my dog Sparrow, that's all I need, and my children, and that's it. I will step aside and create magic.
I have written in so many different environments that I just don't know. I don't know that any one of them matters more than the other. And that goes for all three books. I mean, I wrote the, now what I will tell you, is most impactful for me is writing longhand, which I did not do for the first one, although I stand by all my work. But when I learned that my favorite writer, Chuck Palahniuk, I sound like such a fanboy. When I learned that he writes longhand, I decided to give it a whirl with the second book, they canceled the DJ. And I was like, wow, this doesn't suck. This is actually fun. And I found myself getting engaged with the characters in more ways than I could ever imagine. It's not like I never got engaged with the characters when writing the first book on the keyboard, but there's just something about getting those thoughts from your head to your arm, to your hand, to your fingers, to the pen, to the paper. And there is just something that I can't quite explain that maybe a neuroscientist could, an Andrew Huberman could explain to us what it is, the exact neurochemical, the pleasure center that explodes when you're writing. So
perhaps it's just a case of you're channeling the muse from another dimension, and in channeling that muse, you're suddenly actually beginning to translate it. It is interesting, though, that fashion for going back to using the arm, the hand, etc., to write without the interface of the keyboard does seem to be gaining traction. And I wonder, are we actually going to go full circle here, and before too long, and say, unless I have my quill pen and my inkwell that I can actually dip in and write as the founding fathers of the United States of America put together the Constitution of the United States, then frankly, it's not authentic.
Yeah, exactly. And it would be easy to do that too, Alex, because you can write longhand, and now because we've got technology can do everything, you can just transcribe voice to text. So you wouldn't even need to keyboard your first draft in. You just speak it. Of course, that would also depend on how good or bad your handwriting is.
And presumably also the software that translates the speech to the computer and the word processor, because sometimes when I've looked at some of the transcripts of lectures I've given, you think, really? I don't think so, but there we are. That's another
line. We're in the UK, speak English.
Yeah. It's the nuances, Freddie. I always mean we lose the nuances. What about music? Does music appeal to you as well? Is that something in which you have a particular genre that you go for? I mean, if we're talking storytellers, certainly a favorite of mine was the late, great Harry Chapin. You're probably too young to remember Harry Chapin, but WOLD in Morning DJ was probably one of his finest numbers.
You know, I wrote a lot of, and this is just when you write a story, and if there are writing students listening to this, what you're going to find after you finish your manuscript is that a lot of what, even if it's fiction, a lot of what you write reflects on what you're living at that moment. So the past year and a half, I had been listening to a lot of music by Lana Del Rey and The Weeknd. And so there are scenes in the book, Allow Me to Ruin Your Christmas, where there is music where he's complaining about The Weeknd and hearing him on the radio. Of course, you channel that in, or you realize that I come from the top 40 radio world. And so we were playing a lot of his music. Lana Del Rey, not so much, but my one of my daughters who is in high school, and we would listen to Lana Del Rey a lot. So there you go.
So I've got to ask the question, favorite Weeknd or Lana Del Rey tracks? Are we talking video games? Are we talking something completely different?
I've got to go with Same Old Song by The Weeknd, which is one of his early, like, you cannot call yourself a fan of The Weeknd if you do not listen to his early tracks. Same Old Song is chef's kiss, amazing.
nothing and I only just be gold.
Anything from the Born to Die album, of course. I'm also a fan of the Ultraviolence album. Her new song, it's so long, I forget the name of it, is a little bit too slow for my taste. But, you know, when you're a fan of something, it's almost like you feel like they're a part of your family where you can actually kind of critique, not criticize or lambast, but critique. You could say, oh, you know what? Blue Bannisters, it's a little bit too down tempo for my taste, but you know, I'll listen to Born to Die over and over and over and over and over and over again.
Don't fail me now. Take me to the finish line. All my heart it breaks every step that I take, but I'm open at the gates. They'll tell me that you're mine. back home if I tell you your mind. It's like I told you, honey. Don't make me sad, don't make me cry. Sometimes life is not enough and the road gets tough. I don't know why. Keep making me laugh, let's go get high. The road is long, we carry on. Try to have fun in the meantime. Come and take a walk on the outside. Let me kiss you hard in the pouring rain. You're like a girl's insane. So choose your last words.
Very true, of course, the only certainties in life being death and taxes, as somebody once said. So, you know, that's what we need to head towards. You basically spent 3 years of your life with KDWB Minneapolis St. Paul and 21 years with the two-time Marconi award-winning KRBE Houston. In terms of the kind of, I wouldn't say constrictions. Well, I just have said constrictions. But if we actually look at some of the challenges you're faced with when you're dealing with the corporate bodies, et cetera, and ensuring that you have to obviously fulfill a particular format, a particular style, you perhaps don't have the flexibility that sometimes we can introduce in terms of podcasts, which can be a good thing, can be a challenging thing. I think there's a broadcast discipline that's needed in both instances. But what were your highlights and positive moments of those 26 years within broadcast world? And so on.
I would have to defer to the Jocko Willink. He's a former Navy SEAL who hosts a podcast, and he says his quote is "discipline equals freedom." So, having the discipline that's, you know, kind of it's imposed. It's not kind of, it is imposed, because you're right. There has to be a structure when you're dealing with a music format. So it's talk breaks no longer than 30 seconds. You're talking over a Billie Eilish or a Justin Bieber track, and the intro is probably 15 to 20 seconds. And so at face value, you're like, screw that. Who wants to talk for only 30 seconds? Well, you can get really creative. And I've worked in radio long enough to know that that's my jam, or was. I don't work in radio anymore, but 15 seconds is a long time for a radio listener. And even you can translate that philosophy to social media, where I think there was one study that was done that major corporations are trying to make video hooks to be three seconds or less. So you've got 3 seconds to make an impression, or onto the next video, onto the next article, onto the next podcast. So it's something.
Certainly, it's an interesting sort of area in which how we actually consume things as human beings, etc. So here we are, the festive season, and we've already found out that Germans like to actually hide a pickle for their children somewhere in their festive ornaments. We know that the Dutch like to put out shoes before the night beforehand for Sinterklaas, etc. And perhaps surprisingly, I'm not sure whether this has crossed over to Houston, but the most favourite Christmas Eve meal for Japanese people is actually Kentucky Fried Chicken. That's been a tradition that's been happening since the 1970s. So the good Colonel has crossed over in terms of that. So what Freddy Cruz traditions do you actually have for this time of year, or indeed as we look towards New Year's and 2023, will there be a kind of celebratory cruise moment where you think, right, this is where we go crazy?
I will say that we do the German pickle thing in the Christmas tree. We do that. We're starting this new thing now. It's a late tradition, but better late than never, where we are going to be wearing matching PJs and going to my mom and stepdad's house, so that we will be doing that tomorrow for Christmas Eve, wearing matching PJs. And it's apparently a big deal. My mother says it's a big deal because your stepdad doesn't believe in doing, so wear your PJs. And I'm like, all right. So, David, how do you feel about that? Get off my lawn.
Matching pajamas. Who would have thought it? But still, there we are. Just go. At least you are wearing pajamas, because I think in many cases, that always seems to be a dying art as well these days. Onesie has taken over in a lot of ways, which I always is curious from that point of view. Okay, so looking to 2023, what ambitions or hopes do you actually have for that? I mean, I've refrained from asking you the what has become a traditional question, such as, so the pandemic, did you have a good time during it? Did it help your creativity? Or was it a case of, no, go away, COVID-19, no time for you?
Yeah, you know what? My goal for 2023, 2021, 2022, obviously, as I said, transformational years, both good, bad, indifferent. Really depends on how you look at it. I'm just happy to be around. I realize how rare it is that the two of us can even communicate with one another. The fact that we got out of bed, we're able to go to the bathroom. I don't know about you, but I'm a coffee drinker, that I was able to walk to my kitchen and brew the coffee, kiss my dog, kiss my family. And I'm just happy to be here. And really, it's something that you and I, Alex, you put us in the same room 250 years earlier, and we'd be sworn enemies.
Well, I mean, you may say that, Freddie, but I've got Polish and Irish background, so you know, who knows?
Yeah, but yeah, I guess it's. Society would impose its ideals on the two of us, and it would be hard to have a conversation like this, whereas I'm enjoying myself speaking with you on this thing we call the internet, on this thing we call Zoom, something that that we Homo sapiens would, for the vast majority of our existence, have not been able to enjoy. You know, there's that human hockey stick of technological advance, of human progress, that so many of our ancestors, and not so many, 99% of us, did not even get to enjoy. And here we are. Here we are. We've got heat, or I hope you have heat. You know, I've got heat. It's still really cold outside. It's 14 degrees right now. But, you know, we're lucky enough to have all the things that we have. And I don't take that for granted. So the long answer is I'm just glad to be along for the ride. I'm going to do what I can to milk this one life that I have for all it's worth and help as many people as I can.
Well, I think to a large extent that certainly actually goes along with the whole notion, although cosmologists have actually said in many ways, Freddie, that the universe is happening simultaneously. All things are happening concurrently. So actually, just as we're speaking 250 years ago, we're also speaking now as we're traveling in a virtual ski lift heading to who knows where, probably to actually have a dreadful Christmas. But that's by the by.
Can we fast forward to like 200 years from now? I want to see how things are.
I'm sure we can, but not on this show. It's beyond the remit of the whole sort of piece. Let's talk very briefly about your dog, Sparrow, yeah. Because I was fascinated by this. I gather Sparrow is a crossbreed. Is there any truth in the rumor that that Sparrow is a crossbreed between a Yorkshire Terrier and a Great Dane? Or is that just fiction that's been allowed to go out there?
No. Oh, you must have watched a video interview of mine with Joanna for the JCV Art Studio podcast. So yeah, Sparrow's a mutt, and we learned that black mouth cur is an actual breed. I had never heard of that breed, and so it was suggested to us that he might be part that. And so we googled black mouth cur, and lo and behold, he looks just like one. So we think he's mixed with that. If he's not 100% that, he's mixed with that and maybe German Shepherd. But what you said about Terrier and Great Dane was just something that, because we were talking about mutts, and I go, yeah, ponder that.
It's another line. And again, how I ruined your dog Christmas as well could be another little side of things we could actually take. But, you know, it's I'm just looking at when Disney actually come a calling to actually say, Freddie, how can we actually work on this one, basically? There we are. Yeah. Allow Me to Ruin Your Christmas is, of course, out now. You can actually purchase it on e-format. You can get it wherever you happen to be if you connect with that. It's also released and published by Tuscany Bay Books. If people actually want to stay in touch with you, Freddie, and I can't imagine why they wouldn't, where would they find you on the socials? Are you TikToking with the best of them as yet? Are you Instagramming? Are you Facebooking? All of those magical things.
They can hit me on all the magical things, even LinkedIn. And I will say just real quickly, if you are a Kindle Unlimited subscriber, you get Allow Me to Ruin Your Christmas for free. But you have to be an Unlimited subscriber in order to get the free ebook. So there you go. Who doesn't like free?
Clearly, I mean, this is the clear sort of line that we're coming to. So, Freddie, that's brought us around to two final questions before we actually head off to New York to actually speak with Pamela Suman and her thoughts for the end of this particular year and heading into the new year. In fact, you must actually join us on one of the New York Real Talk packages that we put together. But the two questions that I need to put to you are as follows. Yeah. Number one, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the program today? Has it been okay for you?
I love it.
Okay. That's good. Well, that's the first one sorted out. The next critical question is, can we look forward to connecting with you again in 2023? Will you be kind enough to return?
I will be kind enough to return. I love it. I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. And I thank you for that, Alex.
Well, thank you, Freddie Cruz, author, media host, general all-round renaissance man, but not American footballer as yet. I don't know. Do you still follow the sides, Freddie? Is it still a case of you still have a passion for, as we like to say in Britain, it's just like rugby, but with shoulder pads?
You know what? I don't really follow American football all that much anymore, but if it's on and people are cheering, I follow the mob, because I guess that's just what humans do. We follow the mob. It's for
Freddie
better
Cruz,
or worse.
We salute you. Take care now and happy holidays. And don't let anybody spoil your holiday or Christmas.
Thank you.
ever wanna know. I could tell what you've done, yeah, when I look at you in your eyes. I see there's something burning inside you. Oh, inside you. In your eyes. I know it hurts to smile, but you try to. Oh, you try. When I look at you in your eyes, I see there's something burning. Something burning inside you. Oh, inside you. You always try to hide the pain. You always know just what to say. I always look the other way. I'm blind, I'm blind. In your eyes. You lie, but I don't let it define you. Oh, define you.
This is going out, obviously, as we approach the New Year special as far as Siren's concerned. So what are your hopes for 2023?
Well, I may have said this before, but I don't think that a person could say this enough. I my thoughts, my wishes, my prayers are that everybody, including myself, that we all can become more reasonable in this new year to come, in the year of 2023, that we can all become more reasonable.
Yeah, reasonable is an interesting phrase, and it possibly leads to understanding and the fact that ultimately we do maybe need to understand each other and have that empathy, that sense of compassion that maybe our politicians could take a greater lead in, perhaps. But there does seem to be an awful lot of hate watching out there. And although we are using technology such as the Zoom, such as Facebook, such as TikTok, all of these things are actually out there. And yet there are an awful lot of people who seem to delight in actually being hypercritical and indeed hate watching, to use that phrase. And that doesn't really lead to happiness, does it?
No, not at all. And the term they and them and us and them, and, you know, it's almost like playing itself out in a sort of a ping pong match, you know. And I don't think that that's I can't quote Biden exactly, but when he got into office, he did say something about, you know, a way forward is not necessarily bad and good. It's like rising to a new place of being able to just be reasonable and just be compassionate. And the pointing of the finger, yeah, there are a lot of people that are doing silly things, including myself, you know? So I think that we've just gone into this culture of definitely in the States, where it's just so polarized. You know, it's absolutely polarized. And I don't think that that's just the changing of the guard back and forth and back and forth, that doesn't necessarily bring us to a more enlightened place where we zoom back and we see more and we're able to be just more fair and not such a culture of hate.
I was watching recently Kristen Stewart in the movie Seberg, which is the autobiographical tale of the actress Jean Seberg, of course, much beloved, not only for Breathless and Jean-Luc Godard, but also, of course, an epic in the Clint Eastwood Lee Marvin vehicle, Paint Your Wagon. And it was intriguing seeing how effectively she was in many ways supportive of the civil rights movement, the Black Panthers and so on. But obviously the FBI were clearly monitoring her every words and deeds and actions. And there has always been, what I was struck by was how similar in so many ways we had in the 1960s. And obviously I wasn't really able to remember that, but certainly the tension that in many ways seems to have been revisited in recent months with us.
Absolutely. Oh, without a doubt. There's, you know, I've been reading a lot of ancient history, actually, of England and of Italy, and just doing a lot of patch up on certain aspects of civilization, you know, from way back. And I think sometimes it's almost as if we think that the now is the only thing that exists. I mean, and in a most virtual sense, the now is the only thing that exists, and we can be true to the now, but without historical perspective and understanding, oh, this sort of thing has happened before, you know, and this sort of thing has happened before, and here we are now with the opportunity to have some historical perspective and learn and go forward with hopefully a bit more wisdom and maybe not repeat those same mistakes.
We can go either way. We can obviously progress on that basis and continue ever onwards. Let's just talk briefly about what are your own hopes for 2023? I mean, your own personal hopes for 2023. You've talked about compassion. You've talked about, obviously, greater kindness, greater acceptance, and so on. That's on a global scale. From your own perspective, are you anticipating any journeys, any travels? Are you heading over to Britain? What's the Pamela Sue Mann outline?
Well, of course, we're really hoping to come over this summer. You know, I've been sort of continuing to record and amass the music for my upcoming album, Pink Flamingos. At the same time, I have an incredibly all-important task of getting my daughter into a good school or a good conservatory university. So that has been, she's in her 11th grade in the States, junior year. And so she's got one more year left of high school and then on to the next journey, wherever that is. So I think we're actually coming over to London, not so much for me to do a tour, but I'm hoping that she can attend RADA. They have these really great summer programs. Faye did one last year at Lear, at the Trinity, an amazing drama program where you can sort of get your feet wet and learn from these master teachers that teach at these universities and conservatories. And I think I'm hoping that we can go over for a week and stay with our dear, dear friends who live in Brixton. And I'm hoping that we'll get over to London. You know, personally, for this coming year, the more private or selfish wish is that my daughter get over the hump of the pre-college stress and that she finds the perfect place for her to be, whether it's a university over in the UK or Ireland or somewhere in the States or a conservatory. We don't know, but I'll be so much happier when we're on the other side of this. And I know parents can relate. You're either one side of the mountain or the other. We're definitely like Davy looking at Goliath.
I could actually drop in Donnie and Marie Osmond on the other side of the mountain at this particular page, but I'm not sure whether the Osmonds would ever figure in terms of the Mann household. But what the hey? It's just a thought.
But you know what? I want to ask you the same question. It's your turn now.
for hopes for 2023?
Yeah.
I think I share your own views in terms of I hope that we have a more compassionate society, that we actually have a society which appreciates that speed is not necessarily of the essence, and we do need to actually, in many ways, avoid the tendency to miss smelling the roses on the way, as Sarah Huntley would probably say. We always need to actually smell the roses on the way, and I think we have to do that and acknowledge the gift of actually simply being, and that's something which I think is very important. Other than that, well, obviously lots of other changes occurring with respect to structural changes and environmental systems and so on. So we'll just keep on going and take each day as it comes, really.
I think that's a good plan. And safety. Let's be safe this year.
Very important indeed. Let's look to ensure that's sorted through there. That has pretty much brought to an end a short little discussion with Pamela Suman and myself. Obviously, lots of New York Real Talks available online. Of course, you can access those by going to southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com and just clicking on the New York Real Talk environment. We've clocked up nigh on 52 of those so far, Pamela, which means 2023 could actually see us make the centenary of New York Real Talks. But how do you feel that series has been going and progressing since we started it off over a year ago?
Well, Alex, this has been a lark. This has really been an unexpected, organic, magical happening, and I can't believe that we are above 50 at this point, because it really truly has gone by like the snap of a finger. I mean, or two fingers. It takes more than one to snap. That we are doing this, that we have had such amazing guests on, or what do you call them? Do you call them guests? You call them
I think they're
Okay.
guests, they're guest co-hosts, co-presenters, fellow co-creators of the universe.
Absolutely. And then we've had people come on from your wonderful stable of people and your friends and my friends and people we know that we ask people and they say yes and they show up and they take part in the conversation. And it's a really, I'm having so much fun. I don't know about yourself, but I'm really having fun with this. And I hope that we just can do this forever.
It's been splendid, and here comes Pink Flamingos.
Dance in the supermarket with you. Wanna dance in the supermarket. let's dance like pink flamingos do. And I will dance like me, and you will dance like you.